Hello, Kansas City. Hello, America. And hello, once again, to the world. This is the third edition of the Heart and Goal podcast, and I'm going to apologize right up front because I'm so excited about this show. My voice, not quite what it normally is, but you're going to bear with me. My name is Nate Bucati, and it's great to be back with you. And this time around, it's an honor to introduce another one of our hosts of the show. This team that we have assembled is an incredible team. We've already had Matt Beisler. We've had Benny Failhaber, a couple of World Cup veterans. And today, we have the all-time leader in Sporting Kansas City appearances, in minutes played, World Cup veteran, Mr. Graham Zusi. How are you, Graham?
I'm fantastic, Nate. How are you?
I'm doing great, and we're going to have so much fun today. This is going to be a story time day today because we're going to get some stories from Graham here. We're also going to have a special guest on the show, Alan Dietrich, who has been the man in charge of what's really getting the biggest buzz around Kansas City with this World Cup over the last few weeks, and that's the base camps. I mean, Kansas City has gotten the attention of the world. First, we're going to start here, Graham, just to help people get to know you a little bit. A lot of people probably know much of your story. You're from Orlando, right? You're playing at a college powerhouse in Maryland, winning national championships, and then you get drafted to Kansas City. And do I remember correctly that you weren't even really monitoring the draft the day that it happened?
No, I wasn't. I was actually in my class at Maryland, University of Maryland. I was in we had kind of like a winter mini-mester in January. I didn't go to the draft. I was in class and one of my buddies texted me where I ended up going.
Do you remember what your reaction was?
As a potential draftee, you kind of check out the cities of potential teams. And for the most part, Major League Soccer teams at that time were in very much major cities. So you knew a little bit about every city that had a team. And Kansas City was the only city that I had not been to, for one, and that I really knew nothing about. So I was surprised. I mean, but the one saving grace I did have is that you mentioned Maryland being kind of a powerhouse in soccer. One of my new teammates in Kansas City was Abe Thompson, who went to Maryland as well. So I immediately texted and gave him a call and I was like, "Hey man, what do I need to expect coming out here?" I know the ongoing joke is, do we train in cow pastures and cornfields? And
did you actually think any of those things?
Of course not.
Okay.
But I did want to know what I was in for, going to a very new and unknown place.
And the organization was not what it was about to become. So that's, I think, a part of the story too, because I'm sure you're a guy that was so focused on the game itself.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of your priorities were about, what kind of organization am I getting into? Did you get much of an indication as to where the club was at that point in time?
A bit, yeah. So, naturally as a draftee, you start Googling your team. Where do they play? And I saw that they're playing in a minor league baseball stadium at the time. Mm-hmm. I saw that the dimensions were tiny, really small field. Where are we training? I did see that we had a very nice training facility in Swope Park at the time. You start doing your research and trying to figure out what to expect.
And as the story goes, the guy that you would end up really being tied with in so many ways for your career, both club and country, Matt Beisler, mm-hmm. you end up living together.
Yes, but I will rewind a little bit from there.
Okay.
So I actually didn't come to Kansas City initially. I was finishing up my last class at Maryland and the team was doing preseason down in Florida.
Okay.
And so I never came to Kansas City right away. I met the team in Florida, in Bradenton, I think it was. And that's where I initially met Matt. And we were two of maybe four or five draftees that year. And then they bring in a bunch of young players as well as trialists, if you will. So Matt and I were bunked up in these somewhat apartment townhome kind of situation. And there's six guys living in this little apartment at a time. And it's like a revolving door of trialists and draftees. And at the end of the day, we were the last two remaining, and we're the only two draft picks at that year that got selected and ended up signing contracts, which just naturally made us close. And we did everything together. We had our rookie duties, you know, filling up the water coolers, pumping up the balls, you know, setting up the field. So naturally we just became super close and did everything together. And then when preseason ended, moved back to Kansas City. I initially did not end up moving in with Matt right away. I lived up north off of Vivian Road in this pretty rough apartment complex that the team had to deal with. So yeah. I think I was paying $150 a month.
You weren't making a lot of money at that time either.
I was not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a nice, I was living with Abe Thompson, the Maryland guy. And then Abe eventually moved out to a little bit nicer area. And that's when Matt and I were always going to, you know, we always knew we were going to get a place together. It was, we were debating where that might be. And then when it came time to make the decision, Matt was like, hey, dude, I think I'm going to stay at home this first year, save some money. But my parents are real cool if you want to join. So, long story short, I ended up in the Beazlers upstairs bedroom.
Was that a difficult decision at all? Or did you know him so well and had you already met his family to feel comfortable? Yeah, I'm gonna move into another family's house.
Yeah, it didn't feel very strange. It should have felt weirder, I think. But his family is just so welcoming. I had met them before, and they just made it super comfortable. Really, all our chores were to clean up after ourselves and mow the lawn. Essentially, it.
If I remember correctly, I mean, part of the you mentioned Matt saying, "Well, hey, we want to save some money." You're not really sure about whether you're going to stick in Major League Soccer at this point, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's easy to look back on it and say, well, these two guys became perennial all-stars and championship-winning players and national team players. But at that time, that wasn't a certainty, right? Like, can you take me back to what your mindset was like just in terms of what you thought the future was for your soccer career?
Yeah, well the league at that time had what they called semi-guaranteed contracts, and you would sign for the year, but at any point up to a certain date, they could cut you with no repercussions. So I think that date was sometime in July, if I'm not mistaken. So up until that point, you're biting your nails. You're
basically
have that date circled on your calendar. Just make it to that date, please.
Yeah.
To sign a long-term lease at a place or to buy a house, it was a risky move at that time. So we ended up, we made the decision to stay with his parents through that first year. And then I want to say in November, December, we went out and signed our first apartment lease together.
So that gave you some time to get your feet on the ground professionally, but also maybe explore the city a little bit.
Sure.
As you got to know the city in the first year or two that you were here, what do you remember learning about the city that either surprised you or that stood out to you that you maybe didn't expect?
Well, the first year, it was a little bit difficult for me to explore completely because we lived way outside. We were on like 151st Street. It was out there. I didn't have a car the first year.
Oh, really?
So I was kind of relied on Matt to get me places. But it wasn't until that second year where we moved down to the plaza. And that was my first taste of kind of what Kansas City had to offer. And I realized how much of an arts scene this city has, a fantastic art scene, really good music scene. I'm a serial mover. I moved every single year. My first 10 years as a pro. For that reason, though, I wanted to experience different pockets of the city and really get to know it inside and out.
At the same time that you're learning Kansas City, what we know as soccer in this town was completely transforming, right? Because you just mentioned it. You walk into a club that's going through an ownership transition. You're playing in a minor league baseball stadium, but you're about to move into the nicest stadium in the league at the time. What do you think was at the core of that incredible development into such a successful organization and a successful movement for the game here in town?
I think that started probably before I got here with the takeover of the new ownership group at that time in 2006, it was, correct?
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
With that local ownership group, they clearly had a vision of the future. And sometimes it takes a few years for that to kick off, planning, all that stuff, of course. And then it also takes the vision of a person like Peter Vermees and a coach that changes the culture of a club from the top to the bottom. And to me, it took every single person, literally from the pinnacle of the top person in the club to, I hate to use that analogy, top to the bottom, because everyone lived that culture.
Yeah, and everybody's job was important.
Correct. There was no person's job was less important than anyone else's. And that showed big time, and people were very proud of that.
All right, let's keep moving the ball forward a little bit here. You brought us some cool artifacts or souvenirs, yeah. I guess we could say here. Last week Benny showed us some of his. He got his SB up there. Mm-hmm. So let's start with the flag. Okay, for those of you, if you're not a diehard soccer fan, at the beginning of every match, with two of the captains exchange. Yep. Were you a captain for this game? Tell us what this game was and what this flag was. This is what gets exchanged at the beginning of the match.
I was not captain for this game. I do have one captaincy under my belt for the national team, which I hold pretty fondly and dearly. But this was a match in Kansas City, a World Cup qualifier in 2012 against Guatemala. And I think our press officer, since it was a hometown game for me, nabbed that for me, or the equipment manager, one of the two. But just a cool little souvenir for me to have, being a Kansas City guy myself. I brought my first international goal ball. That was my second game for the U.S. down in Panama in my first January camp. Those are fun because the team will all sign the ball, write little messages, some of them appropriate, some of them not so appropriate. And the coach will write a little message on there as well. It was Jurgen Klinsmann at the time. So, always fun to hold on to those. And then next to that, I'll grab this if we want to do a close-up of it. But this was the 2014 FIFA World Cup participation medal that all the players who played in the tournament got to hold on to. So just another little memento that it's pretty special and we'll always hold on to.
You had some big moments wearing that national team jersey, and one goal against Panama listen, you got Sir Alex Ferguson. It's impressive to get knighted, but when you're San Zusi, I mean, you become a saint to an entire nation because of a goal that you scored. That's a different story altogether. For those that don't know the story, you scored a goal against Panama that ended up actually knocking Panama out of the World Cup and basically bringing Mexico back from the dead and getting them into the World Cup. What has life been like for Graham Zusi since that moment, becoming a hero to, in a weird way, to like your arch rival's fan base?
Yeah, I've gone through a lot of bottles of tequila because of that.
That you didn't pay for, right?
Exactly. it's, after that game, I didn't realize how big of a moment that was. Social media blew up, the internet broke, and in an instant, just I'm beloved by an entire nation of Mexico, simultaneously hated by every single Panamanian as well. So it's it's give and take. I remember getting back from that trip, flew right into Kansas City and had training the next day with Sporting, and I pulled into the facility, get out of my car, and I'm immediately attacked by a bunch of Mexican fans. They threw a sombrero on my head, a Mexican blanket poncho over my, and I was just like, in those moments, you don't really know how to react, because it's like, do I be happy about this? Do I embrace it? It's not something I necessarily did something good for my country. You know, actually, a lot of U.S. fans were pretty pissed at me as well, because of the natural rivalry against Mexico. Yeah. So, at that moment in the game, at least, my mentality is, hey, I'm trying to make it onto the team for the World Cup.
Yeah.
We're still qualifying. I've got an opportunity to show myself and get on the team. And that, this was the last qualifier before Brazil. And so my mentality is just, hey, can I get on the team?
You get on the team. And for me, that 2013 to 2014 window was really the apex of what soccer's ever been in Kansas City from my lifetime of living here. You won MLS Cup in 2013 in this incredible stadium. That seemed to be kind of like, you know, that's what you guys were building towards as a club. And then you and Matt, the two, you know, drafted guys that are our hometown heroes, are going to Brazil to face the group of death. I mean, Brazil, one of the most iconic soccer nations in the world. And we had established the Power and Light District as the place to gather to watch the national team. But now we're not just watching the national team. We're watching two of our guys. Okay. And, man, that place was incredible. For you, what was it like being there? First of all, just like being in a World Cup in a nation like Brazil, but also were you getting kind of, you know, images and things like, were you getting any idea of what was happening back home at the time?
Not a lot initially. So for those of you who aren't really aware of how the lead up to a World Cup works, there's a pre-World Cup camp, and it was a solid month long. We were in California for that camp, and then we played a couple tune-up matches just before the tournament. So I'm not in Kansas City for a solid month leading up to the tournament. And we're just in prep mode. We have our send-off. We're down in Brazil. And of course, while you're in Brazil, the coverage is going to be all Brazilian that you're seeing on TV. Social media was there, but it wasn't as big as it is now. So you're not seeing as much of like the press and what's going on in your city. We don't see it truly until after that first game in Ghana, at least I didn't. So we finally start seeing some footage from the States. It was obviously a huge, huge win to open up the tournament against Ghana. And we're starting to see some watch parties from around the country. And I remember I'm like, holy shit. That's that's Kansas City that they keep showing. That's Power and Light District. And it was that image over and over and over again, playing across the biggest platforms of the news. And for Bees and I, it was such a sense of pride for like the main source and the main, you know, view of the World Cup back in the States. What we were seeing was from our hometown.
So we're watching the World Cup unfold, and you mentioned the game against Ghana. Matt goes out with a hamstring injury and is replaced by John Brooks. At the end of the game, late in the game, you take the corner kick that finds John Brooks. He heads it home for the game-winning goal, and you're right in front of the USA fans. Can you even describe what that moment is like for the rest of us that will never experience anything even remotely close to that ever?
I don't think so. I think I blacked out completely in that moment, which I often do for, you know, whether I score a goal or celebrating. But there is an incredible story about that goal and John Brooks in particular. So obviously, B's started that match and John is on the bench. And center backs typically don't get subbed out. So obviously you have to be ready to go at any moment. But Brooks, the night before the game has a dream. His dream was that he was going to sub onto this game late and score a header off a corner in the 88th minute of the match. That was his dream. And he told people this dream when he woke up that morning before the game.
Wow.
And what happens? He subs on, and in the 87th minute, he scores a header off a corner to win the game.
I got goosebumps, man.
That is insane. That's crazy. Talk about manifestation.
Yeah. So you did it. You see the footage in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. One of the things, a real quick story before we move on. I was hosting a watch party in that very same Power and Light district when the Chiefs won their first Super Bowl in 5 years, and I'm standing on the stage, and I look out into the crowd, and I don't know how I spot one face out of this entire crowd, but over to my left, it's Graham Zusi in the crowd, screaming and yelling. And I've got the picture. I run out into the into the crowd, and we give each other a big hug, and we're screaming, and hey, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. We take a selfie together and all that. And it dawned on me at that point in time, you didn't really get to, finally got to experience what it was like to be on the other side of that equation. And now the World Cup's coming here. You know what it's like to be in a World Cup, but now you're going to be in one as a spectator in Kansas City. How would you describe your emotions? Like, how excited are you for this? And what do you think this is going to be like now that it's about here?
Yeah, the closer and closer this tournament comes, the more excited I get about being able to experience it on that side of it. My earliest memory of the World Cup is 1994 when we hosted that as well. But I was 8, 9 years old, probably just wide-eyed and didn't really know the monumental, like how monumental the event was. And this one's just going to, I think, blow that one out of the water. So I couldn't be more excited. The fact that we've got 6 games in Kansas City is insane. I still don't think people fully understand what that means. And then we touched on it early, but the teams that have announced Kansas City as their hub is just otherworldly as well. So I'm excited for it all. I'm excited for the games. I'm excited to see the influx of fans. I'm excited to see Kansas City do what it does best. And I'm excited to party with you in Power and Light District as well.
That's number one on the list. Right. You heard it here first. Graham mentioned it. We talked about it. The base campers. Boy, that's going to change everything about this experience. We're going to get the inside scoop from the man that basically coordinated all of it. Alan Dietrich, that's coming up. This is the Heart and Goal podcast. And we're joined now by Alan Dietrich. I liked it a lot better in the years that I knew him as the COO of Sporting Kansas City, because that's a lot easier to remember and say than executive director and KC 2026 consultant for base camps. Did I get that all right?
You got it right.
I got to start with a question, because Sam McDowell, the Kansas City Star, just put out a column or an article that had some great insights and stories about it. And I need to know right off the bat, are you really getting a tattoo? Is that happening?
I am going to get a tattoo. I do not have one, and I'm going to get one. We committed to do it, and this is a huge, part of life. So I'm like, yes, let's do it. I just need to get it in a place that will age well.
have you picked it out yet?
Yeah, I think that's out of my arm.
Okay,
I have not picked out the tattoo. It's something that they design.
Okay, this is the English national team, by the way.
That's right.
They do this for every World Cup.
That's right. So the folks that are in like the coaching and leadership staff, they get a tattoo, and it represents World Cup and something about that specific cup to them. So it's a unique design every time. So we'll see what it is. Well, my kids can't believe it. I gave them such a hard time when they got tattoos. And I'm like, you're getting a tattoo? I'm like, yeah, I am.
Yeah, you are.
I've seen you in the gym. I think that'll age just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a fine wine. So you know, let's kind of take it back to the beginning, because you've been working on the World Cup bid for as long as I can remember, when you were at Sporting Kansas City as the COO. And you would tell me little stories along the way that, hey, the base camp stuff is starting to warm up. How did your time at Sporting and what Sporting had become help prepare you for the job, which is, I mean, what a big job to bring in all of these dignitaries from these big countries from all over the world and try to be the representative that shows them Kansas City? How did that time at Sporting help you get ready for this?
Good question. I learned a lot from my time at Sporting. First thing I think I learned was that a sports enterprise is actually a complex machine. And it has the technical side, that's what we call it, which is the players and the coaches and the training and the preparation and all of that. It has the business side, it has the facility side, and then you lay over the top of that experience. Now, these countries that are coming in, they are the greatest in the world. And they are taking that whole complex machine to another country for 6 weeks where they want to perform at the highest possible level. And so that in and of itself, understanding that when they came here, I could then imagine they need a partner. They need somebody who is going to be as dedicated to their success as they are and there to help them find solutions to their needs and to make things work the way they want it to work, not the way the city wants it to work, or not the way, you know, the facility works, but the way they want it to work. So that's how I approached it from a partnership perspective, understanding the complexity of what they're trying to get done. And then, you know, we sprinkle in some unique Kansas City magic moments along the way to make it special and make them see that we're genuinely interested, that we want to partner with them, and that we're invested in their success.
So yes, if people haven't figured this out by now, we are talking about the three so far teams who have selected Kansas City as their hub for the World Cup. The first team to announce, Argentina, one of the biggest federations in the world, current world champions. They won the previous World Cup. Holland, who have some of the best traveling fans you could ask for. And England, one of the most storied soccer nations in the world. I'm interested to know your approach to chatting with each of these teams. Did you have a kind of a set game plan, or did each one take a little bit of a different approach?
Each one was different in their own way. So I'll tell you how FIFA liked to run these would be that the team would notify FIFA, hey, we want to go check out these cities, these facilities. And FIFA would reach out. They would connect with the facilities, arrange a date and time. And their process was the team would just travel to that city, and then they would go check out the facilities according to that agenda. And we decided to do it very differently from the get-go. So we thought, all right, what we're going to do is we're actually going to host them. When they get here, I was going to join them, go with them through every place they went to, get to know them, and start to see kind of what they were looking for that was specific to them and how we might be able to make that happen. You know, if all possible, just change the agenda and make it happen now. Mm-hmm. And that ruffled some feathers, but the teams really liked it, because each one of them did have their own little wrinkles of things they wanted to see, or, you know, a specific thing around like a hotel or that type of a thing. And so we were just able to be flexible and to make that work. And while that was also going on, I'm learning about them. And so I can relay that to the next place we're going, you know, to say, okay, I think when we get to this facility, we may want to start here at this space and help them to see how that could be their training room. You know?
Yep.
And so that's kind of how we did it. Each one was as if it's its own, like, unique individual. And I think Nate and I did a count earlier today. So 13 countries, some of them made multiple visits, but each one was very different. And that actually made it kind of interesting and exciting.
You had to have learned a ton about all the cultures of these 13 countries in preparation for this, I would think.
Yes. Yeah. Learned about that. Learned about, kind of looking back at what they had done at other World Cups. And there are a couple of great people at Sporting, like Chad Reynolds, Kurt Austin. These people are constantly feeding me things that they know about a team. So I tell them who's coming. They'd be, hey, read this article, or hey, check this out. And so that helped just kind of give you a flavor of what they might be like. But then there's nothing like just meeting them in person, getting to know them.
There's so many reasons that the base camp news is big for the city. We're talking about these big federations with all the people that are traveling, the economic impact. When you started this process, did you think to yourself, we can do this? I mean, was that like, we can get these federations all to want to be here?
I know we were dreaming, but we did not dream that big. We actually started back in 22. We did this top 20 hit list. So basically wanted to get the top 20 countries that we wanted to try to attract to Kansas City any way that we could. And so we developed this criteria. It was things like, current rank, past performance, global audience, ticket sales, fans that travel. And so we got all this criteria, and then we started to apply that to the teams. And, those that are in pot one or pot two, the top 20 teams, they hit most of those criteria. So we then went through that list and we said, okay, now who do we think we got a real shot at? And who do we think is going to be a big stretch? And it's funny because Argentina was one where we had heard the rumblings that they were going to be going to Miami. That's where Messi is, good facilities there, strong Latin culture, that all of that would be a draw for them. And that was the rumor mill. And then for England, we looked at their past history, and they had tended to been drawn to big cities where they camped. And so we thought, well, maybe they'll do that in America. They'll go to one of the big name cities. Do they know us here in Kansas City? So they fell under this category called very important, but unlikely.
Important, but unlikely.
But that's why you do the list and everything.
Not impossible.
Yeah. Never say impossible, right? And, fortunately, they worked out.
Graham, I just got to say this. When I saw the name of that column and now seeing that those two teams were not so unlikely after all,
yeah,
that's the story of soccer in Kansas City. All these different times along the way, people in Kansas City decided to do something that people thought was unlikely, and here they are. So that's kind of appropriate to me that's like your big success is that column, the very important but unlikely.
Unlikely, yes. Well, and something that I think is equally interesting in this is during the January timeframe, the three were aware of each other and of their interest in Kansas City, and they still trusted us. That we could handle all three. So I feel like not only do you got these, three very prestigious teams that are putting their stamp of approval on our city, but they also look at us and they say, you can handle the three of us. We believe in you.
I've got a question about some of the requirements that they had. So Argentina will be at Sporting's facility. England will be at Swope Park.
Yes.
And Holland will be at the KC Current facility, correct?
Correct.
What were some of the draws that really made them choose Kansas City as their hub? And then as a secondary question, what were some of the things that you didn't expect them to want or need that ended up coming up?
Okay. We got great facilities and we got a great location, and that's a given. But I feel like kind of the two things generally that made us have success with teams. One was, what I'll say is we built relationships that transitioned into partnerships, right? So we got to know each other. They got to know us. We understood what their needs were. We started to propose solutions, and that's where it gets into the partnership category. And I think that's very important. I think the other thing was we crafted experiences for them when they came to visit, and that helped them to see that we would also do experiences for their team, for their family and friends, and for their fans. And so they saw a valued relationship. from that perspective. Okay, so the second part of your question is, what was I surprised about? Good question. Interestingly enough, one of the teams is very focused on the time when the team is down, off time, yep, and what could they do? And they had some specific things that they were looking for. And so we're still kind of in the hunt of that, to find those things they could do for the off time. I'd say another team is very focused in on the configuration of the rooms in the hotel on the floor where they want all the players to be. You've probably been through this, right? Yep. But it's very specific how they wanted it. And it was difficult for a lot of hotels to meet that. And you think, why? You know, aren't these hotels standard? But they're, you know, they're all configured differently. And to get it just that way, that was, we ended up doing it. But that was a challenge for sure.
The question that I get from everybody, and maybe there's not an answer yet, but when we started talking about this, and I'll post something on social media, I'll get, can we come to training? You know, can we watch the team? What kind of access are we going to have? Is that up to each individual federation? What do we know about that?
We do know from a FIFA security perspective that those are private training sessions for the team. However, each team will do a community training session prior to their first match, prior to the first match day minus one, actually. That will be hosted either at the training site or at another venue that will have some form of access. I don't know exactly how that will be defined yet, but that is definitely an option. So, you know, that could be an exciting time for the community to get to know them.
And the other thing, and this does vary between federation, but while we were in Brazil, we had a bit of a longer leash than I expected. We were, you know, allowed to roam a little bit outside the hotel, go to a coffee shop. Granted, you know, not a lot of Brazilian fans knew who I was, or maybe a lot of American players. But it was really nice to be able to pop down to grab a coffee that wasn't in the hotel every single time. Or there was one night where we were allowed to go get dinner with our families, which again went a long way in terms of just kind of clearing your head mentally, because you don't want to be sitting in your hotel room the entire time just thinking about the game and maybe stressing about the game. So those moments for us were huge in kind of clearing our head a little bit and just stepping back from the focus on the tournament.
I get that. Yes, and I've heard that from them too. Several options that they're looking for, places where the players could just go and be.
Yeah.
They don't want them to feel like they're closed in. But at the same time, the players want their privacy.
Totally.
So they don't want the media all over them when they go do these things. So it's a balance.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of security around them.
Yeah, there will be. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. One of the things I think is really fascinating too, if you're a soccer fan or if you like history at all, Argentina and England have this really interesting historical thread that seems to bring them together. Argentina had precedent, right? Because, or the preferential treatment, because they were they're playing a game here. Is that correct?
Yeah. So FIFA's standards that they released in September said they're going to do it by pot, pick base camps by pot according to rank, but if a lower rank and a higher rank team pick the same place and the lower rank team is playing closer to that base camp than the higher rank team, the lower rank team gets preference. So that put it all, you know, right on the draw. Literally, there was so much attention and focus. I'm sitting there at the draw with my book writing these things down, because we had interacted with a lot of teams. We knew we had these strong relationships, and it's like, okay, how can we, you know, make this work based upon how things turned out.
So Argentina and Netherlands are above England in the pecking order for Kansas City because they're both playing here.
Correct.
And you're talking about England. It doesn't get any bigger. This is they invented the game.
Yes.
They realize they're not playing here. And two clubs that they could be going up against at some point in time are already here, and they still wanted to come here. What? Like, how did that had to get everyone's attention?
Yes. Here's a quick story the quick story of England. So they first came here in January of 25. Great visit, relationship starting to build, but we did not have the right solutions for them at the time that they visited to take care of everything that they needed. So between January to March, I go to work, Pam Kramer, Jake Reed, lots of people give me good ideas of things we could try. And they come back in March, again, the same three people, and we kind of walk them through this new approach of how this could work, and they love it. So then they go back, and Club World Cup was last summer, and their coach, their head coach, their CEO, their whole coaching staff is coming over to the U.S. for Club World Cup. And so they're going to bring them over. And, you know, it's funny because the first thing that I hear from the others that were visiting with the three is, oh, we heard about was Kansas. These guys love Kansas. That's what everybody calls Kansas City, by the way. Yep. It's just Kansas.
Yep.
And say, oh, they love Kansas. And our goal was to get all of them to love Kansas, right? So we kind of show them how everything could work, the configurations between the training and the hotel and all of that. And then we had our magic moments and our great kind of bonding times. We did Top Golf. And, you know, Graham would be, when you're with athletes, regardless of what you're doing, they're competitive.
Yep.
So we did Top Golf, and they hadn't done it so much before, and they were into it. We did paddle, Overland Park racquet court. They love that. They say that's bigger in England than coffee shops is paddle courts. Mm. Had a great time. Then we took them to my favorite restaurant, plug for Eddie V's, and we had a really great dinner night. And that, you know, it kind of pulled it all together with that crew. And so after that visit, they were all in, and they actually wanted to do an agreement with us at that time. But FIFA was learning from Club World Cup base camp experiences, and that's when they developed that criteria. So we knew it was all on the draw. And after the draw, I'm talking to England because I'm disappointed, but my only hope is I see that they play in Dallas. Two games in the Northeast, one in Dallas. So I'm like, okay, we're kind of in the middle here. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that still gives us a shot. And they had seen Swope, one of the original three. I had taken them up by Swope. So they had that in the back of their head. They visited several sites in the Northeast and then on their way to us. And then they got here with Coach, and he likes Swope. And he just liked the layout. He liked how things are closer. He wanted to keep the team really close together, and he could see how he could accomplish other things with it. So that's kind of where it clicked. And he's like, okay, we want to be here. We like this place and these people, and that facility will work.
You know, Graham, you spent most of your career training at Swope before they built the new complex, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people might look at it and go, well, that's an MLS's secondary team. Their MLS Next Pro team trains there. How nice could it be? But it's a pretty nice facility.
It is an extremely nice facility, and it has continued to grow over the years. They've added on. They've really buffed up the, you know, the weight room and the training facility. The grass is immaculate.
It is.
It is like it one is. Of the best fields I've ever played on. They just do a great job. And to Alan's point, there is a sense of just like intimacy in it as well. You know, some of our tightest teams were based out of that facility.
We touched on Argentina briefly, but I think there's a lot of people in town that are still going, Lionel Messi is going to be just hanging out in KCK. Like this. What was it like working with the Argentina Federation?
It was great. And first off, just to give you a perspective about Argentina, not only the reigning champion, this is going to be huge for Kansas City. Because you've got Messi coming back. You know, last time he was here, he sold out Arrowhead.
Yep.
Right on his own, basically. You've got their opening match for the reigning champions and the potential for this quarterfinal, which could be Argentina that we host versus Portugal, Messi versus Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. I did read the other day somebody was saying that that match could be more watched than the final. If those teams are together. Do you get it?
I believe it.
So that's going to be huge. The Argentinian consulate was in town last week, and I met with them, and they are projecting 100,000 Argentinians to live in Kansas City during the tournament. I mean, that's massive. And at first you think that's way overestimated, but they had 75,000 at the last World Cup. So I don't think it's a stretch. And, you know, these people are passionate fans. Graham probably knows this.
Some of the most in the world.
Yes. Yeah. You know, people, they will do anything to be by their team. So my recommendation to Kansas City is twofold. First off, pair up with a friend. One of you rent your house while you live with the other one. And then the second thing is throw yourself into the World Cup experience. Go to Fan Fest, go to Power and Light, go to bars, go to restaurants, go to other activities you hear about, and just live this for this period of time, because we'll never see anything like this again. And so it'll be unique.
To that point, that's one of the most things I'm excited about is some of the stories post World Cup about just what happens in Kansas City and everyone's experience throughout the tournament.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Oh, I didn't tell you about what it was like to be with the Argentinians, though. They were great. So we have this breakfast, Hotel KC. Thank you, Sarah. She does a phenomenal job. And we walk out, and I'm going to give their driver some tips about how we're going to navigate around, right? So I say, hey, where's your driver? And they said, oh, we don't have one. We thought we would just take cabs. So I'm thinking, okay, we're going all over the city and out to Lawrence. It's not going to work in a cab. So I said, you guys want to ride with me? And they're, sure. So we jump into my car, and they have varying levels of English that they speak. And I habla un poquito de español. But we started to get to know each other. And, you know, it started to form not just what they wanted with their base camp facility, with their hotels, which was very insightful. And this is where I started to get in trouble, because I'm learning things from them, and then I'm texting the next facility like, okay, hey, we need to do this. Because I didn't want to speak it, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm driving.
You're trying to be sly about
it. That's right. So I'm driving with my knees. And so the one guy in the back says, should we be worried that you are driving with your knees?
It's a custom here in the Midwest.
That's right. Fortunately, my car has all those safety guidelines. You know, mm-hmm. it'll do all that stuff. But anyway, so we were able to kind of change the visit to meet their needs. And then we kind of got to the point where they started joking. And for me personally, that is a sign that your relationship has kind of matured. So first off, you know, like they're at Compass, the sporting training center, and it has this massive gym, right? Yep. So they walk in and they go, oh, we feel a little cramped in here. You know, they walk out to the super pitch, three massive fields, and they go, we don't think our team will fit on here. Yeah. And so we just knew, you know, this is their way of
super comfortable already.
Yeah, of getting there. And several others I'll tell you another time. But we kind of bonded over that. And then we went out that night after we'd had a really good day together, and we went to Jack Stack, and we got a lot of barbecue, because they wanted to experience the Kansas City thing, and they'd heard about our barbecue, and they devoured it. And they ate all the sides, and they ate all the desserts. And it was just kind of one of those great communal moments where you bond together. But we had not resolved the hotel yet. And I was working with Jenny at Visit KC, and we'd visited several, but none of them worked their configuration that they needed. And then the next morning, the last shot we had, and it worked. And you could just tell that they could picture themselves there. They loved the training facility and that this was going to work for him.
You've talked a bit about the England's camp, Argentinians. Tell us a little bit about the Dutch camp and what the Longs are doing so amazingly well at the current facility. Obviously, we've seen what they've done for the women's game.
Yeah,
Tell us a little bit about their pitch.
Well, so the Dutch first visited in February 25, and they are not easy to read. Right. So I thought it went well, but they had indicated that they were going to be looking at a lot of other cities. And so I kind of kept in touch with them after then. And then right after the draw, they texted their team manager, and she said, we're coming back to Kansas City. So I'm like, this is great. Ready for them. So they come back, and they knew of Argentina and the impact that that would have. So they were sensitive to that. We went to the Current. They like the facility. They like the people. And I think what really clinched it for them, actually two things. One was that Raven Jemson, the COO, and Ryan Hall and Michael Damus and Therese Vanderputen, their staff there, they did a really good job of continually proposing solutions and engaging with them. And so after their December visits, they did a lot of Zoom calls. And then I think the other thing that really added to it was what you were talking about, Graham, wherein they saw the commitment to women's sports in the city, and they feel that way about their country and their women's sports. And so, you know, there was kind of a synergy there, and they saw that in the eyes of the staff. And and so, yeah, they kept texting me. They never said, though, Argentina and England were both like, we're in. Netherlands was more like, okay, yeah, we will let FIFA know. You know, right. You're like, no, let me know, and then we can let FIFA know.
Right. I got to tell you, though, watching the footage, I can't get enough of watching the footage of their fans, the La Oranja.
Oh, yeah.
The way they march to a match, they might be hard to read when they're negotiating a base camp. It is not hard to read the emotions that they have on a match day.
Yeah.
The thing I love about them is they seem to combine the passion for the game with fun. Uh-huh. They are out to have a good time. I mean, what is it going to be like having that fan base in Kansas City?
Well, I know from the get-go, from the early stage of us figuring they were coming here, that Pam and her group started to map out where they will do that march. And I just saw a video of it today going, this will be in Kansas City. And it is really cool. So between the 100,000 Argentinians and then the Dutch doing their march and England doing their thing, it's going to be quite the cultural experience this summer for sure. But you know what? We're ready for it.
At the end of the day, what do you want visitors to say about Kansas City? What do you want the base camp teams to say about Kansas City? What do you want Kansas Cityans to say about how the tournament went at the end of the day?
All right. So let's first do it was
let's go visitors.
Visitors. Yeah. All right. I would love for them to say, hey, didn't know much about Kansas City, but I loved it here and I'm going to come back. And I think that's what we're going to see. Is that they're going to come here, much like other World Cups, and be like, wow, you know, I heard of the Chiefs, but this was great, and I want to go back and experience it again. Now, personally, for the base camp teams, I really want them to stay that we were the best partner they've ever had, and that our fans were their best fans outside their own country. Yes. That we will adopt them, and we will cheer them on, and we'll be their biggest fans outside their own. I would love for Kansas Cityans to say, this is the wildest and most amazing experience I've ever had, and that our city is changed for the better because of it.
It's exciting stuff, and I don't see how there's any way that the city won't be changed forever because of this. But the more things like this we do to get people excited, and the more ways that we let people know that each one of you matters with the way that the people that are visitors experience this and the way you experience it as well. I just want to say one last thing when it comes to Argentina, too. One thing I know, now that I work for MLS, I got a couple of buddies. One's who's a match commentator from Argentina, and one, my buddy Hernan, who is a producer. He had gone back to Buenos Aires this winter, and he sent me a picture of one of his favorite restaurants in Buenos Aires, and it's called Kansas Barbecue. They love their barbecue in Argentina. It's a little different than ours, but they love it, and they're going to love the barbecue here like your trip to Jack Stack told
us,
right?
Yes, 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 absolutely. That's really cool.
Isn't that neat?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, it's going to be great. Well, Alan, first of all, I want to say thank you for all the work you and the people around. I know it's not just you. The people around you have done to be our representative to these countries, but also congratulate you. It's got to feel great to put so much work into something and have it turn out as unlikely maybe as you thought it might have been to be this wonderful.
Man, it's a great feeling. I love this city, and I love this sport, and I think some of the greatest people happen to be athletes in the sport of soccer. Mm-hmm. And that's my experience with Graham. And so anyway, to be able to participate in this was just an honor and a blessing. And quite honestly, the way the draw initially turned out, I was disappointed.
Yeah.
And you know how all things work together for good, right? Because of the unlikelies, but to be able to see it to come together like this, it's been a thrill. It's a real, definitely a highlight of my career for sure. And can't wait for the summer.
I'm sitting here flanked by guys who helped Kansas City become the soccer capital of America and now the base camp capital of America as well, which that's what people are saying now, man. So we got to own that.
We'll take it. Yeah. We'll take it. It's worthy of debate, but I think we got it.
We got it. And we've got Alan Dietrich. We're lucky to have him. Thanks to Alan for being on the show as we continue with the Heart and Goal podcast. Now it's time for what is quickly becoming one of my favorite parts of the podcast, the Heart and Goal podcast. Graham, this is going to be your first time doing it. We're calling it five-a-side. I know you're a guy that still plays a little five-a-side yourself.
I dabble.
These days you dabble. So this is like the old school, this is bad memories for me when you're on the playground and they start, you know, and everybody picks their five because I was always one of the last ones picked. But we're going to pick our own five-a-side here. And the topic this week is sports bars in Kansas City.
Ooh, okay.
I know you're not usually elbows deep in chicken wings watching football games, but you like a good sports bar every now and then. So you got some ideas, and you've moved around the city as you told us earlier.
Yes, I have.
I'm going to give you the first pick, and we're going to do this in a snake draft format. That was Matt's idea. So you go first, then I'll take two, then you take two, and in the end, we'll see who has the best five sports bars in Kansas City. You ready to go?
I'm ready. All right. This is an easy first pick for me. My number one draft pick would be Varsity Club down in the River Market.
That's the Celtic supporters club. My buddy Connell McCourt's trying to give me, I like Celtic. I like to watch them. And that's the spot to be for the Celtic games. Good soccer bar.
Great soccer bar. Open early on the weekends for those prem games. And just a nice good spot. Got some good cocktails and great Guinness on tap.
Okay, so that's a really good pick. I'm sticking in the soccer lane because, for me, it's a place that I frequent all the time as one of the Kansas City Gooners, the headquarters of the Kansas City Gooners, the Johnnies in the Power and Light District, also home of the American Outlaws. They've always got the game on. Great community there. The Johnnies all over the metro are great, but that one in particular, the Power and Light District, is going to be my number one overall pick, home of the Kansas City Gooners.
Solid pick, Nate. Yeah. Solid pick.
Okay, I get to go second now, too. Okay, this is going to be weird. I'm going with Johnny's again, but not Johnny's Tavern, not the big chain. There is a Johnny's in my old neighborhood in KCK on 7th Street, and they've got pictures of famous sports Johnny's all over the ceiling. You still got to get a Johnny Russell one in
Johnny
there.
Johnny Unitas.
Like Johnny Bench.
I've been. That's a good, solid pick.
You've
as
been
well.
There.
I have.
Oh,
I
what
have.
A spot. Yeah.
I was there for a Celtic Champions League game.
No kidding.
Yeah.
It used to be the Celtic bar there, too. So I went with two different Johnny's that are unrelated. Now it's back to you.
All right. For my second pick, I think I'm going No Other Pub. Obviously, the sporting connection, but just a nice big bar. They've got some games. They've got ping pong. They've got, I think, some bags, maybe.
Yeah, they've got a bunch of stuff.
Stuff.
You're anyway. A ping pong master, Whiz. From what I understand. Yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah,
I dabble in ping pong as well. Okay. But yeah, I think No Other Pub is my second choice.
Okay, you get number three now.
All right, number three, I'm going to go with, it's a toss-up. I'm going with the Peanut.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, going you with stole the best wings in Kansas City.
Yeah, they're up there for sure.
Man.
But yeah, just a staple. They've got a few locations. I've hit a few of them as well.
Yeah. The one by UMKC, I feel like, is the OG, right? But they're all great.
Yep, yeah. I'm with you on that. So, okay. Yeah, the Peanut.
That's the first time you've stolen one from me that I wanted to take, so now I got to do some thinking here. I'm gonna go to a spot just on the north side.
Don't do it.
Caddyshack.
You
like Caddyshack?
Love Caddyshack.
My guy Stephen St. John put me on to Caddyshack.
Gosh dang.
Never had a bad night there. Just the vibe, the pizza, incredible. Yeah, Caddyshack. That's going to be my number three pick. So I get to go number four now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number four. I like the other place. I'm a big pizza guy. And the other place, there's a few locations in town. For me, the original's in Old Overland Park, right off of, I want to say, 80th and Metcalf.
Okay.
Great pizza. Always got games on. So the other place. But there's a few locations in town, and they're all good.
Yeah. Good pick. Okay. I've never been, but
yeah.
A good pick.
Okay.
All right, back to me. For my fourth pick, I'm going Kelly's in Westport.
Ooh. Yeah. The Iowa State Bar. That always was famous for the Cyclone right. fans that come down for the Big 12 tournament, but that's an iconic place.
Yeah. Staple. Been around forever. Talk about late night pizza too. Oof.
Yeah.
Hit that up a few too many times.
How did you stay so fit?
Oh man. I always enjoyed Kelly's.
Yep.
One of my spots I lived was just around the corner mm-hmm. as well. So
okay.
Easy pick for me.
You get one more.
Oh, that's right. I'm going to wrap it up. Ooh, let's see. Okay, so second year was Sporting, my first
place. Wait, did you already get five? Is that five? I'm trying to remember now. You've had.
Don't try to steal my picks, Nate.
Okay, I'm trying to remember. You've only got four so far?
Varsity Club?
Yep. You went with the Peanut?
The Peanut?
Yeah. You went with Kelly's and no other pub. Okay, so yeah, you got one more.
Kelly's, and I'm going to go with, okay, second year in the league, Bees and I's first place together outside of his parents' house on the plaza, Grand Falloon.
Oh, all right. Yeah. All right. That's a good shout. That's an iconic spot. It's been around for a long time in Kansas City as well.
Yep.
For me, I'm going to go with a place that's a little newer. A buddy of mine who started brewing his own beer and ended up with his own brewery, Strange Days Brewing. Love the beer there. Good.
That's a sleeper fifth pick.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. You know, right near the River Market. Yeah. I think that place is going to be jumping during the World Cup. I know I've talked to Chris. They got a lot of different activations planned and everything. So mm-hmm. just a welcoming vibe. Pro soccer. I do have to say this. That I think they're the Tottenham supporters group, which I don't endorse personally. But
well, they won't be celebrating.
Yeah. That was Graham, and I endorse what he said. I think we got a couple pretty good lists right there. If you've got thoughts, if you like my five side better, or if you like Graham's better, let us know. Reach out to us on social media. If you have some spots, I'm sure we left out some great ones. Make your nominations in the comments as well. But that's going to do it. This is your first time on the show, man. What did you think? Did you have a good time?
I loved it. I had a great time. Yeah. Alan was fantastic.
Yeah.
I love hearing the behind-the-scenes stuff with the World Cup going on, just stuff that not a lot of people know happened. And he was hugely insightful. I'm looking forward to doing more.
Speaking of behind the scenes, I want to make sure to thank the proud producer of this podcast series, Waltz Tetrick Advertising, making all of this possible. Our thanks to Alan Dietrich for joining us with all the great insight today. And thanks to you, Graham, for hosting with me. I know you're going to be back with more stories down the road.
Definitely.
And our thanks to you for listening and watching. And look, we need your help because we're trying to get the word out about this. We want this podcast to be the source that everybody goes to when it comes to their information about what's coming up in the World Cup, how to enjoy it, how to get the most out of it, and just how to have a good time as we get ready for the World Cup. So you got to make sure you like, subscribe, let your friends know, post, all those things that you can do. Write us a review. That stuff really matters because we got to get this out to everybody. So our thanks to everybody behind the scenes making this happen as well. This has been episode 3 of the Heart and Goal Podcast. We will see you next time.